please in every way I can. Gonna give you all of me, as much as you can stand. Make love to you right now, that's all I wanna do.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. That, of course, is the voice of Barry White. Today is Barry White's birthday. We'll be playing his music during the course of this hour, during our breaks. You listen to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA. Of course, WEAA support for WEAA is provided in part by Monroe Shocks and Struts. Information available at monroe.com. We are going to talk, as we have been talking the show a great deal over the past months, the issue of hunger. We don't realize that hunger is in our midst, that food scarcity is in our midst, that in America, close to 20% of Americans live with food insecurity. In our own state, the numbers are debated. 13, 14, 15% of Marylanders face food security. We are doing a series, which I think we're airing part of next Tuesday here on the Mark Steiner Show, on our Soundbites project, which is the future of our food and farming system in America. We are going to do a look at three cities here in our state, Cambridge, Baltimore, and Cumberland, at food scarcity in those communities, and hear the voices of people involved in that work and who are food insecure as well. And one of our partners in that, a group that been working on this and has given us a lot of help in finding folks to do this project, is Maryland Hunger Solutions. And they're with us in the studio today. Lisa Klingenmeyer is with us in the studio, Anti-Hunger Program Associate at Maryland Hunger Solutions. We'll be joined shortly by Michael Wilson, who's Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, making his way over to the studio. And Tony Simmons is in the studio. He's a housing advocate, member of Housing Our Neighbors, who's experienced food insecurity and homelessness himself. He's also a member of the Faces of Homeless Speakers Bureau. And welcome, all of you. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you for having us.
And, folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. You can also log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. We had a conversation today with some people who are on the Baltimore Blend, two young artists who are actually doing a fundraising concert for Govan's Presbyterian Church. And they were doing that because over 300 people a month in the Govan's neighborhood come to their church alone seeking food, 300 people a month. You multiply that by how many churches we have that do that in the city, by the lines that you see surrounding soup kitchens right across the Enoch Pratt Free Library on Cathedral Street every day, and other places. It's a much more intense and complex and serious issue that many of us realize in this community. And there'll be an event tonight we're going to talk about. You can all participate in Maryland Hunger Solutions in partnership with Active Voice. Participant Media and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is holding a screening of A Place at the Table, a film we talked about a month ago with Rosa Aguilar here on this program. It'll be showing tonight at 6 p.m. at the Charles Theater. It will feature a screening of that documentary, a post-screening panel discussion, an after-party at Joe Squared, and you should just... We'll find out about tickets here in a minute. But welcome, good to have you all with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Michael Hayes, welcome. And this is you're settling into your new job as the head of Maryland Hunger Solutions.
I don't know if settling in is the right word. It's more like drinking from a fire hose. It's really intense.
What do you mean, drinking from a fire hose?
So there's a lot of information. Maryland Hunger Solutions is a very important organization. So I learned about all the things that we're doing, dealing with hunger, whether it's helping people get food stamps, helping people get WIC, helping school systems and schools and students try to figure out how they can do breakfast and lunch and after school and summer programs. It's working with food banks. It's working with advocates throughout the state. It's working with state agencies and local governments. So it's all of that, the breadth of that. But then it goes a little bit deeper. We're actually talking to people. Every day we get a call in our office, somebody wanting to sign up for food stamps.
Every day.
So the 300 people at that one church that you referenced
right. Is
similarly the tip of the iceberg of the hunger challenges that our state faces.
One of the last things Jeff Singer said on this program, who will be on your panel tonight, who is one of Baltimore's leading advocates around fair housing and homelessness and understands these issues better than most, said that at least, if not more, one-third at least one-third of all Baltimoreans are home insecure. They don't know if they'll be able to afford the rent or the mortgage or keep a place to live. One-third of the city, home insecure.
Yeah.
One-third of the city.
So the statistics which came out last week from USDA say that 13% of people in Maryland are food insecure, 13%. And that of that 13%, 5% are severely insecure. So clearly that distribution is around the state, but it's going to have a heavy impact here in the city of Baltimore.
And, you know, I one of the things I think I'd like to turn to here just for a moment, because you'll hear some of these voices in our program next week. But, Tony, it's always good to see you. I'm glad you're in the studio with us.
Oh, glad to be back again.
But talk a bit about what that means for you, for the people who you're involved with day to day, the people who you've lived with, grown up with, your own story about kind of being food insecure, your own story about what it's like to all of a sudden not have a place to eat and live.
Oh, it was shocking. When I first became homeless, I was like, okay, not me, you know, I need to go back home. And then I seen a number of people that's out there every day, like at Daily Bread, 700 people every day. Soup kitchens are crowded every day, 7 days a week, not just by the homeless, but people who don't have enough food at home. I have seen people that go to the soup kitchen and divide their food up. Eat half and take the other half home because they don't know where the next meal is coming from. And I'm glad that there are soup kitchens around the city to feed the homeless and the people who are poor. But soup kitchens are not designed, you know, with nutrition in mind. They're designed to feed a mass of people. And if you're not careful, because they serve a lot of pasta, a lot of rice and bread, and it's not good for your health to eat that way every day. But when you're hungry,
it fills people up.
It fills you up. Yeah, it does. It fills you up. But to see the amount of people that I come in contact with every single day, not only in the shelters, but they're living in the parking lots and abandoned buildings everywhere, it tugs at your heartstrings.
And what you just said also, because people, you know, there's a lot of people who are looking and go, well, how can they be hungry? Look how overweight they are. You know?
Yeah.
And aren't they skinny if they're hungry?
Right.
And what you just said is because the food that people can get to is full of sugar, starch, pasta, the things
salt.
That create salt mm-hmm. that create the obesity that makes people not understand the connection between obesity and hunger.
Right. So the connecting tissue, and Lisa and I talk about this all the time, the connecting tissue here is poverty. That's the connecting tissue
mm-hmm.
because wealthy people don't have problems getting food or eating healthy.
Right.
I mean, they may choose not to, but it's not because they can't. And when people don't have a choice, when you eat what you can and when you eat what other people provide for you, you have challenges with obesity and all the health care problems that are associated with that.
If you have $5 and can buy 10 pieces of fried chicken from the corner store.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to come back and talk to you about this because we're going to do the food stamp challenge later on in October because the average food stamp recipient has to survive on – if all you're surviving on is food stamps is $4.50 a day. And the challenge
– $4.50 a day.
The challenge that we're going to be giving
people – You
can't
even eat at McDonald's anymore for $4.50 a day.
The challenge
– Or any of those fast food places.
The challenge we're going to give people is live on $4.50 a day for a week. For 1 week, live like a food stamp recipient on $4.50 a day. And so we're going to look for elected officials, we're going to look for students, we're going to look for prominent folks to join us in the food stamp challenge, $4.50 a day. Because when you realize how hard that is, it'll open people's eyes, it'll open people's minds, and then you see a Congress that's trying to cut food stamps, and then you see exactly what we're dealing with in this country.
Exactly.
So Lisa, tell us about tonight.
So tonight we're going to be doing a screening of A Place at the Table. This is a fairly recent documentary that explores food insecurity, obesity, and poverty in the United States. It profiles a couple of different families, and it largely profiles a couple of kids because when we talk about these things, one of the things to remember is most of the people on food stamps are families with children or seniors and disabled, and these are working households, and the people that are being affected by these are largely children. And when we think about Baltimore City, 84% of kids in Baltimore City schools have free or reduced price meals, 84%. And a lot of those kids are therefore in households where they're not necessarily knowing if they're going to have dinner when they come home. When they don't have school in the summer, they don't really have access to those meals that they have at school anymore. So we're trying to use this film to really generate these sort of discussions about Baltimore. What can we do in Baltimore? What's the landscape of Baltimore in regards to hunger? What's the landscape in Baltimore in regards to poverty? And how is we as a community can talk about solutions to these problems? So we're going to do a screening of the documentary to really sort of get people talking. We're going to have a panel presentation to sort of talk about these themes together. As you mentioned, Jeff Singer will be on the panel. We're also going to have Ellen Teller. She's the Director of Government Affairs for the Food Research and Action Center, the national leading agency working on these issues. Tony is going to join us tonight, as well as Bonnie Lane, telling their stories. And we're going to just really try and facilitate a discussion on how we can tackle these issues together.
Let's hear, we have a thing queued up, I think, for the movie tonight, a little piece of the trailer of this movie so you can hear what we're talking about. This is a very powerful film, and let's talk about it. We can also come back and talk about solutions. I want you to join us at 410-319-8888 with your ideas and thoughts. Let's listen to this piece first.
It's a problem that people are ashamed of acknowledging.
It's very humiliating.
It's tiring.
What are we going to do?
This generation will live sicker and die younger than the parents' generation.
Hunger is right here in the United States.
And the problem is getting worse.
The reason people are going hungry is not because of a shortage of food, it's because of poverty.
One out of every two kids in the United States at some point will be on food assistance.
I was one of those kids that was hungry. It messes with you.
The average food stamp benefit is $3 a day. There are people who are living on that, and you really can't.
If you have a limited amount of money, you're going to spend it on the cheapest calories you can get, and that's processed foods.
My dream is to go to college, but I can't tell my kids, I'll make sure you guys eat in 2 years. I'm struggling to even feed my kids every day.
Put that in there.
Okay, that was a bad idea.
As many as 50 million Americans rely on charitable food programs.
I haven't received a pay raise in 4 years, and what I used to spend on a month in groceries now gets me about 2 weeks.
It's amazing how the need has increased.
Charity is a great thing, but it's not the way to end hunger.
We're weakening our nation.
I don't really know what to do.
That's just a little piece in this film, and I think that the wonderful piece about this film is that it kind of describes it on a national level and goes beyond our notion that that the only folks in America who are hungry are people like in our communities in Baltimore in food deserts, mostly African-American communities. This is widespread.
Right.
It's beyond. It's rural. It's urban. It's suburban. It's everywhere that we see. The fast-growing poverty in our metropolitan area is not in Baltimore City, but it's in Baltimore County.
So it's the challenges and the changes in the economy, and it's what's left of the Great Recession. So people who lost jobs, whether they were in manufacturing or in retail or they were in government, those jobs have not come back yet. And people who've lost hours, who are working part-time when they really would rather be working full-time, you know, they're struggling to not only maintain that house and their housing, but how can they do that and put food on the table? And those are the folks who are getting food stamps who never thought they would be getting food stamps. Those are the folks who are lined up at food banks who used to contribute to food banks.
Right, right.
So the one thing pitch I want to make about the movie tonight, which is that this is a free film, and people who are interested in coming, we'd love to have you come out to see the film and to learn and participate. So. And it's at the Charles Theater at 6 o'clock. So if you show up at 6 and say, hey, I heard about this film, I really want to see it, you know, I'd come at 5:45. But it won't cost you a dime to see the film.
There's a – when Rose Aguilar was on talking about this film and hunger in America a few weeks back, this is some of the stats that's going to blow your mind about America. In 1980, there were only 200 food banks
right
in the United States, 200 food banks. Today – there are over 40,000.
Right. So some of us are old enough to remember when food banks weren't that prevalent in the community. And some of us attribute some of this to Ronald Reagan's attempt to try to make charity the answer to these problems, because he's the one who used the story of the person in the fur coat and the Cadillac going to the grocery store and using their food stamps to buy steak. You know, that canard, that attempt to just try to, you know, demonize recipients. the truth is there are a lot of people out there right now who need help. And this program was designed to make sure that people don't go hungry in this country. And it's not enough, but it's a benefit that people have earned and qualify for and helps people survive.
And we've only been, what is the budget now, $4.5 billion over 10 years.
Right.
Which is barely, I mean, and cutting that back.
The need is so clear. Coming out of the Great Recession, and some of us think coming out of it is still a myth. The jobs have not come back in the way that they really need to. So the challenge is, what do we want? Do we want people going hungry in the street? Or do we want to make sure that they participate in this system? And the thing about food stamps people have to keep in mind is it's such an economic incentive to the state and to the country. When you buy food stamps at your local grocery store, that reverberates through the community. The store makes money. The employees get paid. It just moves the entire economy. It's such a stimulus to the economy.
But as someone said to me the other day, it's interesting, they said to me that a few weeks ago I had this conversation with somebody who he and his wife did not have enough work. They had, but they didn't have enough. So for the first time in their entire lives, they had to get food stamps.
Right.
And the embarrassment they felt to have to use this card to go buy food as opposed to going to the grocery store and just buying what they needed and paying their cash or whatever it was they're buying. And that there is a stigma that people feel about using this. And it's part of the problem.
But there's less stigma now when you go in and use an EBT card that looks like a credit card. There's less stigma because people don't look at the card that you're using. The clerk does. But it's like using a MasterCard or a Discover card.
But when you're in line doing that and they say, well, you can't buy this with this card.
Right. There is that.
and so the question becomes, I'm curious what we think needs to be done. I mean, I will support soup kitchens and food kitchens and pantries.
And we do too.
To do that. I think it's important to do. But there's a growing body of people in America that are hungry. So what's the answer? It can't be just charities, foundations, food stamps. Though food stamps are something that we need to have in this country to kind of help people who have low incomes and be able to keep food on the table. But what are we talking about? What are you going to be talking about in terms of what the solutions are? What changes this?
Well, when we talk about hunger, as Michael said, what we're really asking is not why is there hunger, but why is there poverty? Hunger and homelessness, these are symptoms of a larger issue. So it's harder to say how can you just end hunger. What we're really asking is poverty. So some things like wages. Obviously, if you have a minimum wage job and you're making $7.50 an hour, and the cost of housing in Baltimore, fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment is just over $1,200. You would need more than three minimum wage workers living in that household working full-time to be able to afford just housing. So when we talk about wages, that's certainly an area that we could use a lot of assistance in, looking at raising the minimum wage, looking at having living wages, making it so that when people are working, they have an ability to support their family, so they don't need to be on these programs. I have never met anyone who wants to be receiving food stamps. Nobody wants to receive food stamps. People want to be able to make an income where they can support their families, and that's just not the reality for most families right now.
Yeah, and for me, and thousands of others, we fall through the cracks. It's like I am more healthy now being homeless and on food stamps than I was when I was housed, because when I was working, I wasn't making enough money to make ends meet. So I had to buy the food that I can afford after paying my rent and utilities. But according to the government, I was making too much money to qualify for government assistance. But now that I have my food stamps, I can now make better choices of what I eat. But when you're homeless, it's more difficult because you don't have a refrigerator. So you have to do this on a daily basis. But I do have a choice now. In places like the farmers market, they accept food stamp cards now. And I can, you know, go and get a salad for dinner or for lunch or whatever. Having the food stamps and having that choice now, because when I was working, I had no choice. I had to buy what I had left over, the money that I had left over. But being homeless and being able to qualify for more government assistance, but it shouldn't take that. I mean, if you are walking on that thin line of poverty, the government should be able to say, okay, we'll allow you to have your food stamps, and we'll give you more assistance. And it's funny, how can you be more healthier when you're homeless than you when you were housed? And what happened to me, it took a scare. I had my hospital appointment, and the doctor told me if I didn't change my eating habits, I was going to have high blood pressure, and I will be diabetic within a week or so. So when I qualified for food stamps, I began eating healthier. I mean, it takes some work, you know, because like I said, you don't have a refrigerator, so unlike the house, I can't go buy a whole bunch of groceries. But it's not impossible. It can be done. My next checkup took 6 weeks. No high blood pressure. Diabetes was not even found. And he said, okay, just keep this up. You know, just keep up the way you're eating. And not only do you have to eat well, you must exercise. And the homeless population, there's very little places for you to exercise. And there's no gym you can afford to go to. But if you do a little study and a little research and take care of yourself, because it's tough enough being out there with the stress is already high. So what you have to learn to eat well, and instead of buying that soft drink, you can get an orange juice or apple juice, something that's healthier. And right now, today, I'm healthy, and I lost 15 pounds, and my doctor's happy, and I'm happy.
So I coming back to what we were talking about earlier, because I think what you're describing, Tony, is really important for people to kind of hear and wrestle with. And a lot of listeners have gone through what you've gone through. Many have not. But hearing that, I think, is important. And what you said earlier, Lisa, about wages. I mean, here we are. We've had discussions in the show around the question of wages in the city, and there's a battle going on in the food industry to raise the raise the salary from $7.50 an hour, $8 an hour, to $15.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And people will argue, well, why should somebody working in a fast food joint think they deserve $15 an hour? You know, and that is part of the people are going, you know, that it means maybe your wages should be also higher because you're doing a different kind of job. But people working in fast food today are no longer the children of yesterday.
No.
They're adults.
Yeah.
With families.
So we have this dichotomy. We have this conflict in the American psyche, which is that, A, you should earn what you get. You should get what you earn. At the same time, we don't want to see people in need. You know. So there's this charitable part of us, and there's this part of us that's jealous when other people get something. So the stigmatizing of food stamp recipients is something that we're completely opposed to, and so we think EBT cards are helpful, but they're not a panacea. They don't answer all the problems. But you know, this program is so helpful in so many ways. I mean, Tony told his own story. You know, we could tell stories of single mothers who are raising their kids, and because of food stamps, their kids could grow up to be the president of the United States.
Absolutely.
You know, that kind of investment doesn't happen just by accident. It's because society makes a decision that we want to make sure these people get support.
So what do you think you do? I mean, I'm everything I can be at the film tonight now that I'm free. Didn't think I was going to do VR. I apologize not being able to moderate the panel tonight, but we thought that we had another event that was canceled.
We'll forgive you.
Next time. We'll be there for the next one. But the question is, beyond kind of showing films of the Charles, and that's not putting that down, I think it's important people go see this film and enter this discussion, what's the political response? What is the social response to this that has to happen? Because it's much larger than growing consciousness, is much larger than just fighting to raise, putting more money in food stamps in our budget, which is a big piece of it. But this is a huge battle we're facing in America.
Right. So I'm going to give you several answers to that question because I think it's a multiple part answer. Part of the answer, I think, is the kind of work that we do at Maryland Hunger Solutions every day, which is to connect people to resources, to work with local and state governments and federal governments to try to do what you can, to work with food banks and advocates to try to develop policy that can really help us deal with this. I think another part of the answer we're going to talk about after the film tonight. I think every organization, I think every individual, like every advocate has answers for this, and there's not a single answer. And so I think we want to continue to explore this and to have a conversation because no matter what happens with this film tonight, we're not going to solve the problem. We're going to continue to have a conversation that lets us move forward to address this problem. But at its root, as Lisa said before, it's about poverty. And so how do we deal with poverty in this country? We haven't solved it. You know, we didn't have a real war on poverty, but we still need to deal with these issues of poverty, and that's how we're going to move forward.
We began a war on poverty in America.
That's correct.
We have to get a very short break. Can I keep you guys here for a few months longer? I want to come back to this war on poverty we had, the Poor People's Campaign of 1968, what happened to trying to transform the system from a actual war on poverty and putting people to work to a
sure.
world of philanthropy,
yep.
which is nice, but doesn't cut the mustard.
Right.
We'll be right back as we talk with folks from Maryland Hunger Solutions. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We continue for the next few minutes our conversation with folks from Maryland Hunger Solutions, who tonight will be in partnership with Active Voice and Participant Media, Robert Woods Johnson Foundation, hold a screening of the documentary, A Place at the Table, a great documentary, at 6 p.m. at Charles Theater tonight. There are still tickets available, and you can go to LKLINGENMAIER at mdhungersolutions.org. To secure your ticket in advance. There will also be tickets available at the door. And you all can join us here now at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Michael Wilson, who's director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, and the woman I just spoke about, Lisa Klingenmeyer, who is anti-hunger program associate at Maryland Hunger Solutions, and Tony Sibbins, who is a housing advocate, member of Housing Our Neighbors, who formerly homeless himself, and a member of the Local Faces of Homeless Speakers Bureau. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. We just got a tweet from another WEA host, Marsha Jews, who just said, how do we as Americans not want to feed, clothe, employ, and house Americans?
So it's hard for me to put myself in the place of people who write letters to the editor and complain about food stamps. And there are people like that in our community who don't want to do that. Some would say that's not charitable. Some would say that's not Christian. But it's clearly a place I can't put myself. So I can't tell you how they get there, but they do. And when we do letters to the editor or we do op-eds, every time they come out of the woodwork complaining about people getting government benefits who they think shouldn't get them in some way. Even though most of the people who are getting the food stamps, the majority are children.
And I think there's also a real breakdown in the community and how we identify as a community when this happens, when you can walk by someone on the street who's sitting there and totally ignore them as if their presence is not even existing in the world. That says a lot about how you define who's in your community. And I think there's a sort of false idealism around individualism and that I as an individual have somehow created the world in which I live and in my current situation, while at the same time totally disregarding all of the supports that I've had to get along the way. I was able to get blessed to have family that was able to support me, help me go to college. I was able to have community members who were able to take me in and have me pay rent that was significantly under fair market rent. And these sorts of things are how I was able to go through school, was able to get a degree, and now have the job that I have. But it wasn't something that was totally an individual thing that I did. And when people don't have those supports and they fall through the cracks, somehow we look at them and saying it's their problem, not recognizing the fact that they just don't have the supports that they need. And then I've been able to have the supports, and in kind I should try and then provide it to those who don't have it. So I think some of it's just trying to redefine what community is, who is in our community, and understanding that when someone in my community is sitting on a park bench, that that affects me, and I should act to that.
Yeah, to be totally honest, before I became homeless, I used to walk past homeless people all the time. And, like, they need to get their lazy butt up, you know. Mm-hmm. Why do they want to lay on the parking lot? Why don't they get a job? And like most Americans, until it hits you in the face in reality, get a reality check, then you realize, okay, we do have a problem. Then how do we solve this problem? But for a lot of people, they are embarrassed about doing so. Because I know when I'm on the street, people will not make eye contact with you. They'll look directly at you and turn their heads, you know, because they see themselves. They would ask themselves, well, what would I do if I found myself in this situation? A lot of people want to help, but they don't know how to help. And the way I look at it, it's a three-part problem. We need to start with affordable housing, affordable health care, and jobs that pays a livable wage. You cannot keep giving out these minimum wage jobs, because if you live in a shelter, you're never going to make it out of the shelter with $7.50 an hour, because your money is going to keep going back and back. Health care is skyrocketing. I'm looking forward to the new Affordable Health Care Act that's coming. But now you have housing. Housing costs are steady rising, but your paycheck never rises. So you're always playing catch-up. And there's a lot of places out there, a lot of wonderful places like Healthcare for the Homeless. They helped me. I mean, I love that place. I'm there so often, people thought I worked there. But I loved it, but not only because they cared about me as an individual, but they showed me how to eat healthy and how to take care not only of my physical body, but my mental health. And they taught me how to be an advocate for the homeless and be a voice out there and speak up. Because a lot of people out there do want to help. I mean, there's a lot of really good people out there who really wants to help, but they don't know where to start.
And I'm going to encourage everybody to come up to the Charles Theater tonight and knock on the door, get in.
Yeah.
6 p.m.
6 p.m. Probably show up a little bit early.
It's free.
It's free. To come in and see the film, that it's a very powerful film, A Place at the Table with Maryland Hunger Solutions. I want to thank Michael Wilson. Congratulations on the job as director.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions.
If I could say one thing real quick, I want to send a shout-out to my son, who's a student here at Morgan State University.
Oh, that's great. Cool. There you go.
All right.
Freshman?
Junior.
Junior. Hello.
Fine school.
And Lisa Klingemeyer, who is Anti-Hunger Program Associate, and Tony Simmons, who will be there tonight, and on the panel, member of Housing Our Neighbors and a part of Local Faces of Homeless Speakers Bureau. Thank all three of you for being here today.
Thank you. Appreciate it much.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we are going to once again talk with Love the Poet, a new one-woman show coming to town. Don't go away.